we're happy to welcome back to the show and the studio from the Versant Power Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine. Our friend Sean Latch is back from a whirlwind tour. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, good to be back.
You had a great journey.
Did have a great trip. It was nice to have a little vacation and, you know, take some time away, catch my breath a bit.
Nice. And now you're back. Now, when you come back, is it one of those situations where you're like, oh, right, this is what happens when I go away for a while?
Yes. I was very lucky that, one of my grad students held down the fort, kept things going. And I did come home. There were still, 600 emails and, multiple other bits to catch up on. And but it's all been going pretty well. And I think we're back in the swing and moving forward.
Well, good. Well, it's a busy time of year coming up at the center and the planetarium. Let's talk about some of the events for November and tell us about Secrets of the Universe.
Yes. So we have a brand new Friday night public program called Secrets of the Universe. And this is in particular because of Versant Power. So this program was funded by Versant Power as part of our rebranding, and we're really excited about it. It's a show that takes a look at how technology is used in astronomy. So we'll be looking at the Large Hadron Collider, and also LIGO, of course, the gravitational wave detector. So basically ways that technology is being used in astronomy to help us uncover and unlock those secrets of the universe, some of which may help us here on Earth in a variety of ways, from developing new types of clean energy and materials to just basically understanding how things work a little bit better.
That's awesome. A great new program for children, too. I love reading about this one. It sounds fantastic because it's the questions you get all the time from kids. Cosmic Colors.
Yeah, Cosmic Colors is a show that we love to show with children. It, of course, takes a look at how we use color in our universe, and not just the colors that we see with our eye, but also those colors beyond. So, part of the electromagnetic spectrum, so looking at radio and infrared and all those types of different wavelengths that make up really the whole spectrum and how we use that. Most folks don't realize that we use infrared all the time. That's how you turn on your TV if you have a remote-controlled TV and things like that. And, of course, radio waves, we often think of as being sound, but they're not. Radio waves, of course, are longer wavelengths of the spectrum, and typically those waves will transmit radio signals and television signals, but then they're decoded on the other end that turns them into the sound, of course, that we hear.
It's like magic, we say.
Yeah, it is sort of like magic. It really is. And, it's one of those things that people often don't think about, the how we use color in so many different ways. And so this program really sort of relates that to us, and also how we use it to really look at things in our universe. I always tell folks that, back in the day, astronomers would look with their eyes, and you could, if you looked at, a star or a galaxy or something like that, you got some information. But using other wavelengths really allows us to strip away those layers. It's kind of like going to a doctor. If all they could do is look at you, they can tell if you have a cut or, if a bone is sticking through your skin or something like that, which is not fun. But, we use ultrasound. We use other wavelengths to really probe the body. And the same thing with astronomy. They give us a lot more information. So most astronomy today is done in wavelengths well beyond the visual spectrum.
Music show this month, Pink Floyd is back.
Yeah, The Wall returns, of course, one of our classic favorites. And so that's going to be our music show for this month. Moving into spring of next year, we're going to have a bunch of brand new shows. So keep your eyes peeled for those. But The Wall returns, one of those favorites, of course.
No question about that. We're talking with Sean Latch from the Versant Power Astronomy Center. The science lecture series this month, we were talking about it before we came on, climate change and other associated topics. The special guest, Dr. Seth Campbell.
Yeah, he's going to be talking about his research in the Arctic. In particular, he typically goes to Alaska and often, prior to this year, of course, to Canada with all the fun restrictions, pandemic restrictions. But his research looks at how the Arctic and how sea melt, melting of sea ice and glacial ice really is changing our environment in terms of the climate. And climate change, of course, huge in the news. And, the last few days in particular with the summit going on over in Scotland. And we've really had a focus on climate change this year with our science lecture series. So we had Paul Mayevsky, who's the director of the Climate Change Institute, in earlier. And also in December, we're going to be having Cassandra Rose, who looks at climate and sort of policy as well. So really trying to focus on that is one of our major themes for this year in terms of our science lecture series.
You've got a very interesting event coming up on November 20th, connecting with folks to celebrate the James Webb Space Telescope.
Yeah, they're finally launching that thing. One of those big deals. You know, this telescope has been in planning for a number of years. They've really done lots of testing, and it is now scheduled for launch on the 18th of December. We're doing a special event. We're one of the NASA community partners in sharing the information about this, so we're going to be doing a special event at the planetarium. We have Dr. Carter Emmert, who is the director of astrovisualization from New York's Hayden and AM&H, who will actually be doing a remote control powering of our dome and showing us the launch of JWST, the James Webb Space Telescope, and its deployment. So we'll be doing some special simulations of that, making a hands-on paper model of Webb and talking about how NASA actually uses origami principles to put big packages into, you know, a tiny rocket to send them off. And some other special programming around it. So this will be the first event related to James Webb Space Telescope. Then we'll be doing things, of course, after launch as well with it, when its first images come back too. So it's really going to be a lot of fun.
Well, that's awesome. Up in the skies this month, among other things, I know there's a partial eclipse, I think around the 19th. Is that anything we'll be able to see around here?
Oh, yes, definitely. If you want to get up at O-Dark 30, as I like to say. So the eclipse actually starts at 2:18 in the morning. Maximum is at 4:02 a.m. And then it finishes at 5:47. So we're going to have about 97% coverage or so during this partial lunar eclipse. So quite a bit of it. So you'll basically have sort of a white edge left, you might say, the one corner that won't be covered, but you will get to see a bit of a lunar eclipse. Typically, during total lunar eclipses, the moon will turn a deep reddish-brown or coppery color. You'll probably get a little bit of that with this, but there still will be that white edge that doesn't quite pass through the moon shadow.
Nice. A couple of meteor showers ahead in the month of November as well.
There is the Leonids peaks on the 18th or the 19th. Now, that is typically a really great shower, especially every 33 years. But this year, of course, it's peaking just as we have a full moon, because you can't have a lunar eclipse without a full moon. So, really not too much to see in terms of that meteor shower. Hate to say it. I mean, you probably see a few, but you're going to have a lot of moonlight. So, might have to wait for next year to get a better viewing of that one.
Now, we've talked with you before about your view on some of these private space flights and skeptical about a lot of these, but I have to say, and I don't know how you felt, as much as I dislike the idea of some of them, the reaction that William Shatner had was such a powerful one that to me, it almost made that worthwhile to hear old Captain Kirk talking about how just overwhelmed he was by that experience.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is one of these things. Like I said, you know, it would be great if some of those funds went into other things, but As mentioned, I mean, I think anytime we do space exploration or even some of these private flights, hopefully it paves the way for making it easier and better and hopefully, you know, more affordable down the line. So I think it did have an effect, and especially for people who, you know, grew up with Star Trek in particular, like myself and others, you know, having someone like that go into space, I think is you know, very moving in as well. One of the interesting things, of course, for those who don't remember, Mae Jemison, who is a NASA astronaut, actually was one of the first, really the first Star Trek astronaut to fly in space, you know, because she actually flew on board space shuttle missions and things like that back before. But it is kind of fun to see William Shatner go up. And you know, it's probably good that he's going now, because, you know, he's not a spring chicken anymore,
per se.
You know, and I mean, it's really hard to believe how long, you know, Star Trek has been around. So
I'm waiting. That's my goal. When I'm 90, I plan on
there you go.
Going up as well. I did see some pictures the other day of astronauts training in the desert for a potential mission to Mars down the road.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, right now the big push is to get back to the moon, hopefully sometime between 2024 and 2028. And still keeping our fingers crossed that Jessica Muir here from Maine will be one of the you know, the first woman to walk on the moon. We can, you know, keep our fingers crossed for that. But yeah, one of the goals, of course, down the line is return to the moon and then move on to Mars. Mars, like I've mentioned before, you know, longer mission, you know, 3 years to go and return, you know, a year and a half on the surface. So lots of new technologies have to be developed. But that's one of the things NASA's always trying to do, you know, of course, some testing and prep for this, whether it be testing in the desert. And when I lived out in Hawaii some years ago, of course, there was also, you know, they had a habitat there, basically, that they would put the astronauts in, lock them up for a year and a half. You know, some people who wanted to test what it would be like to be away from civilization for a year and a half and just be able to work with each other. So, you know, one of those things.
I could spend a year and a half away from civilization, and I don't even need to go anywhere. I'll just stay home for a while.
Yeah, I often think that too, though. I think, you know, there's some things I would really love to give up for a year and a half. There's other things might want.
Yeah, exactly. Sean, it's good to see you again. Appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks so much for having me.
Welcome back, and we'll check in with you again late November, early December, and find out what's happening for that part of the year.
Sounds great.
Sean Latch from the Versant Power Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine. It's